This spoiler-filled podcast is recorded live, unscripted, and intended for those over 18. Now prepare your ears for the audio stimulation they've been waiting for all day as we step into
the spoiler room.
And welcome, everyone, to the spoiler room. I am your host, Mark the Movie Man. Tonight, we got a spoiler room full of cold cats to talk about Tank Girl from 1995. First off, let me drop a little poem for you. She is the butterfly that dances in the world. Say hello to Dawn.
Hello.
Oh, yeah. Then next to Dawn, he is a piece of dental floss who burned me toast. Glenn. How you
doing,
Glenn?
I'm trying to think about like the first time you got laid. You just got to say, Daddy, are you sure this is right?
Oh, yeah. That is righteous. And then, on the other side of Dawn, he enjoys his rainbow Twinkie fluid. Say hello to Cole. How you doing tonight, Cole?
Dear Lord, great. Thanks for having me, man. Glad
you could be here. Yes, folks, we are talking Tank Girl in my little improv little intro there. Hope you enjoyed it, and welcome to talk about this very unusual film called Tank Girl, based off of a comic, mid-90s. And Dawn, did you want to give it?
I'm still trying to get over feeling like I'm a Glenn in the middle of a Glenn and Cole sandwich, okay?
I didn't go there. I just figured I'd let the moment happen. Let it happen. So, Dawn, why don't you give a summary of what Tank Girl is about?
Tank Girl is nothing like the comic book. Okay, it's very, very little like the comic book. It is ostentatious, outrageous. So, it is the post-apocalypse dystopia. The world is, it has not rained in 11 years, and everything is dry. And, of course, this takes place in our favorite post-apocalyptic continent, Australia. So, we have Water and Power, run by one of my favorite villains, Malcolm McDowell. And Lori Petty is sort of, is Tank Girl, just completely random.
She is. She is just random.
Yeah, Tank Girl is random. If you're talking D&D character, she is neutral.
Chaotic.
True neutral. No.
True neutral. Yeah, you're right. True neutral. Yes.
For those of you who appreciate that particular reference. who, stealing with along with her boyfriend and other cohorts, living very quietly in a little house, stealing water and whatnot from the Water and Power Company, who don't like that very much, so they come and wipe everybody out and take her prisoner, but Malcolm McDowell likes her sassiness, sauciness, attitude. You know, she's chaotic. So there's these mythical creatures called the Rippers.
Yes.
Yeah, the Rippers. Sorry, I went in a Firefly place with that one.
Yeah. hard not to.
So the Rippers, yeah, kangaroo creatures.
Yes.
And apparently the writers decided they liked and decided that Tank Girl liked the kangaroo creatures because kangaroo have very interesting genitalia.
Sorry, I threw Dot off.
No. Yeah, so Malcolm McDowell kidnaps Lori Petty and, or I'm sorry, Tank Girl, and makes her go and find the Rippers for him, and things happen, and they do battle, and then there's stuff, and
there's stuff and things that happen. Yes,
and some of the most
things.
Random things, and yeah.
Sorry, Dawn, I didn't mean
to put you on the spot.
Didn't mean to put you on the spot with the description on that, but I know how much you love the movie, so that's why.
I do, but the whole story is complete chaos. It doesn't really know where it. Because Tank Girl is such a big story, and they tried not to use the storyline from the comic, they really made a storyline that was not so much of a storyline, but just a series of adventures that make no sense as a movie, but it's still all sorts of fun.
It is. And, folks, we are in luck because we've got one more cat in the house. Oh, yeah, he is 3 liters of high-octane petrol. Say hello to Scotty D.
Pa-pa-pa-pow.
Scott, glad you could join us. Don was just trying to explain this chaotic film and proving exactly how difficult it actually is to probably describe the goings-ons in Tank Girl. So let's first go to Glenn this evening. Glenn, Tank Girl, initial thoughts with this film.
This film, well, it's been swell, but the swelling's gone down. So I love this movie. I know it's not like the comic. Well, I mean, it's kind of like the comic. The comic is pretty random at times, too, in chaotic and all over the place. But I don't know. I always have a fond spot for anything post-apocalyptic. I'm a big fan of Lori Petty. And I don't know. There's just something about it that just I really, really enjoyed. And I can't really put my finger on it. Just it's one of those movies. I think a big part is I love the soundtrack.
Oh, yeah.
I absolutely love the soundtrack of this movie. It is on almost every song in the soundtrack. It's on my regular playlist on my phone or my iPod, which I found, which still works. But yeah, I don't know. It's one of those movies that I remember seeing in the theater opening night with a bunch of friends, and we all loved it. And I actually hadn't read Tank Girl at that point. Mm-hmm. And I credit this with introducing me to Tank Girl, because then I went out and I immediately got whatever I could get my hands on and became a fan of Tank Girl, like the comic. So I can't be mad at it for that.
No, you can't. And again, this is still a time, we're in the mid-90s now, where people are still trying to find their footing on how to do a proper comic book movie, on what you do pick, what don't you pick, what should you put in the film, what, you know, where you can break away from it. You know, it took them a good chunk of time to try to find their footing with how to do a comic book film, and this was just another attempt. Dawn, how about you? We know you enjoy this. What about when you first saw this film?
When I first saw this film, I really enjoyed it, actually. I didn't see it in the theater. I saw it when it came out on video. And probably not even right away at that. So I saw it right about the same time I saw movies like that came out a year or two later, like Barbed Wire and The Fifth Element. So I thought that stylistically it was really great. It was one of those movies that had really strong female characters, which you didn't see enough of at that point. And they were completely outrageous and unapologetic. And just for the age I was at that time in college and just finishing up college and really trying to establish, finalizing who I was as a person, it was really good to have such strong female characters who were completely anti-norm.
Yeah, they are definitely that.
And I love the styles, very colorful. I as much as how she looked is important in this film, Tank Girl, and I like Lori Petty. I'm trying to think of exactly how to say this. This film is more about expressing visually like a comic book more than telling a story.
Yes.
And, oh God, I'm not saying it right because it just sounds like I'm describing the movie. That's very frustrating. Come back to me.
Okay, we'll come back to you. We'll come back to you. Cole, you have a bit of a different opinion than some other people in the room. So you were telling us the story of when you first saw this film.
Oh, yeah,
when
man.
You recently saw it. So why don't you tell us when you first saw it?
Absolutely, man. I saw this, what did it come out, 1995?
Yeah.
Seems like it was a couple months after the show came out, but it was probably longer. And, you know, I loved this character. I mean, you know, everybody in my, you know, I grew up in a, I don't want to say tough. I grew up in as much as you can streetwise in Wisconsin. I grew up that way.
Sure.
And I auditioned for a play my freshman year and was introduced to a whole new group of people that I never would have met and, you know, started hanging out with different people, not better people, just different people, people who had a different idea of what having fun was. And that meant reading, listening to music, talking about movies, analyzing art. And Tank Girl was a staple of those conversations. It seemed like everywhere I went, it was sitting on a coffee table covered in cigarette ashes and beer stains. and shortly thereafter, I became a fan. I mean, you know, to this day, it's Eric Draven and Tank Girl are like, in terms of the grittier characters, you know, she's my favorite. I love her. You know, I love her as a character. And, you know, I went to this movie and at the time thought it was really fun while everybody else hated it. Watching it again tonight, you know, I'd rather talk about what I liked about it.
Sure.
And I'll say this, you know, everybody in this movie I love. I mean, we're talking Malcolm McDowell, Lori Petty, Naomi Watts, Graham Revell, who did the score, Stan Winston, Ice-T. These are people that I, you know, like. I follow them. You know, this movie, after the success of The Crow, we had tons of movies come out that tried to follow the blueprint. They had a song, they had an album soundtrack packed with modern grunge artists, just like this one has, just like Judge Dredd had. Seemed like they had Graham Revell score just about every one of them.
Yeah.
including this. I mean, you know, I'm not just saying this as a Crow fan. If you really follow this, you'll see The Crow is really the blueprint for all of these. And, you know, last but not least on this list is Rachel Talalay. And this is very much a Rachel Talalay movie. I mean, if you watch Freddy's Dead and then watch this, you'll see similarities visually, stylistically, tonally. Whether or not that fits with the character I love is a whole other story. And while I'm usually willing to grant everybody a free pass, if they do something original that differs from the comic, they actually litter this. Well, I won't say litter. They fill this thing with bits from the comic. In fact, an amazing animated short about a third of the way through, which was like, wow, I want to see that movie. I'd rather talk about all the wonderful people who got paid to make this. And, I'm glad, like Glenn said, it turned him on to the comics. Good. I think that's awesome, man. You know, I'm glad this movie brings people closer to the comics. And for those listeners who maybe haven't listened to previous shows, I am not, okay, this adaption has to be hardcore close to the comics. Mm-hmm. But this, it just, for Rachel Talalay to have read this comic in between takes on Freddy's Dead and knowing how much passion she had for the project and how much she fought for it, I guess for me, I was expecting something a little closer to the source material, especially being that, you know, the only time you're really reminded of the comics is when they show you the comics. Maybe if they cut all that stuff out, I might have actually not thought of it as much. Maybe you know, but anyways, I think there's a lot of great people involved in this movie, and I'm glad that it brings a lot of people closer to the comic. I think that's great, man.
Sure. You were going to say something, Don?
Oh, I was just going to say, part of the reason that animated bits were in there, according to the, the two originators of the comic book, is because the lovely studio execs and the studio screwed it up and did not film about 10 scenes of the movie and then cut out a whole bunch of other things. And that's why they had to actually fill in those unfilmed scenes by creating those animations to finish the movie and make it make sense.
And it feels like it.
You know, this, again, like I mentioned before at the beginning, is that studios in that didn't know how to handle comic book films yet because they saw what Batman did and what The Crow did, and they're like, we want to do that. We can do this. When they didn't realize that part of the reasons why those worked was because the directors and the creators basically went about their business in creating something, and the studios, you know, kind of stayed out of it, and this one really felt like the studios, I think, had their hand in it quite a bit, trying to make something more poppy than possibly hold more to the comics. So that could be why it was like that, especially since this was only her third film. So, you know, that could be why you get that feeling, Cole, is because they may have tried to set out to make a more accurate one, but the studio, the guys who are forking over the money, going, you know what? I don't know if we could go with that.
Yeah. Which is why I would never badmouth anybody involved in the crew. I mean, shit, these are brilliant people. I mean, Lori Petty is a great actress. You know, the people involved in this movie are amazing. This cast and crew, these are great people.
And Scott, what about you? We're talking about kind of first time we saw this film, as well as what our initial thoughts are with it.
Well, first off, let me just say that the studio, in regards to this movie, especially if you listen to, like, I listened to the audio commentary and everything before I did this, before I came on here, and they were just a bunch of absolute motherfuckers when it came to this movie, and I mean that quite literally. They are. You only get as horribly perverse and wrong-headed about handling a movie if you have actually had sex with your parents. That is how bad they were.
Wow.
Now, going back to my originated with Tank Girl, I was a big comic fan, and I was really into Judge Dredd. Now, if you're really into Judge Dredd, you find out about more British sci-fi comics that are kind of on, like, the fringe. So you find out about all the stuff in 2000 AD. And if you find out about 2000 AD, you find out about Deadline. And if you find out about Deadline, then you find out about Tank Girl. And so I had a couple of the big oversized Deadline magazine comics from Britain, and I was really into it. And then I saw the teasers for Tank Girl, and I'm like, there's no way they're going to be able to make a movie out of Tank Girl. There's no plot to Tank Girl. Then the movie comes out, and of course it's got this plot and everything like that. And so one of the things I often get people, because you can, I know that like for instance, Cole, I know that you weren't saying this, for instance, but like one thing that you can always, if you always ever want to really trap like a one of these like internet commenters, you can always say like, did you like Tank Girl? Oh yes. If they say oh yes, say, do you demand that your movies are absolutely faithful to the source comic source material? Oh yes. Ha ha. Bullshit. Because this is a movie that I do like, while regarding that no, this is nothing like the comic at all. It is because as random as crazy as this seems, there is way less plot and way less sense to the Tank Girl comic. The Tank Girl comic is pure punk rock anarchy, and that's what makes it so great, actually. That and, of course, the amazing art and everything. You know, Alan Martin and Jamie Hewlett did something amazing with that comic. Because I had, like, the collected editions and stuff.
Yeah.
This movie, some of it was they kind of figured they would have to. So, like, for instance, Hewlett and Martin, they actually developed this story with, like, the water and power and the bad guy Kesley and stuff like that. So, okay, we get it. You have to have a villain. We get it. You have to have something. The studio kept on going into them, though, and she kept on trying to make things that were really, like, wild and stuff. And kept on saying, well, we need to know more about this Tank Girl person. What's her backstory? What's this? What's her name? That's another thing. They give her a name. She doesn't have a name. Her name's Tank Girl. And here it's Rebecca. And you'll know that because every 2 seconds there's some kid screaming, Rebecca, in the movie. They kept on saying, you know, what is it? And my favorite comment from her on the commentary was that at one point one of the people came to her for the millionth time and said, well, what is her Tank Girl's motivation? And she turned to the studio exec and said, Tank Girl's motivation is to tell you how stupid it is to ask that question.
I'm going to disagree with you on one thing, Scott. She is named in the comic as well.
Is she? Because I do not remember her having a name. As I can tank.
Rebecca Buck.
Is it really? Oh my god, you know what? I have to dial back my rant of it. I am very sorry.
Man, look out, so, troll bait.
I was so indignant too, god damn it. Okay, no, I will totally eat it and admit when I'm wrong, absolutely. But I mean, like, but I will say though, however, the movie does have a lot more plot and everything, and she tried to have it, you know, less, more random, more just kind of about the attitude. She estimates on the commentary that they cut out close to an hour of footage.
Wow.
That's insane. And some of it they just wouldn't let her shoot. Like, for instance, she said that we couldn't shoot hardly any action scenes, she said. Like, so part of that was practical reasons. They says we had a tank that actually kept on stalling in the sand. So, I mean, that's why you only see the tank really move in, like, one scene.
Yeah.
In one action scene, anyway. And, so she tried to have more. Other things, the studio, like, freaked out. They said, like, for instance, she has, like, in her bedroom, she has a big collection of dildos. They cut that scene because they said, that's filthy. No one would have that. They cut a scene like in the action scene where she like puts a condom on a banana and throws it at the enemy soldier. She says, "Why would she do that? That's silly. That's just dirty. Don't have her do that."
She would do that because the first word she ever spoke was cauliflower penis.
Yes, it's just you know all this stuff like it was just so wrongheaded. They cut out, of course, they cut out the love scene, which included apparently a 10-inch kangaroo penis made by Stan Winston, incidentally. Which is awesome.
Stan Winston rocks.
Stan Winston rocks, and he actually took a pay cut to work on this movie because he just wanted to work on it. It had all these compromises, and if you watch this movie, it has so many compromises, and you can kind of imagine, like, oh, if only. At the same time, I still love this movie. In my dorm room, when this movie came out when I was in college, I had two Tank Girl posters, one on my door, and a framed one of the teaser poster that said Tank Plus, and then had the smiling face of Lori Petty. I love this movie. I thought it was great. All my friends loved it. I had a friend who had a car that was falling to pieces, so it was put together with duct tape to keep the parts going, and even on the gas tank she wrote, Tank. Nice. So, I mean, this is like a cultural icon thing of the age, and she's a wonderful feminist icon because mm-hmm. she's allowed to be sexual without being exploited. She's allowed to call her own shots. She's allowed to have her own arc. And she's allowed to just kick ass and have her attitude. And she doesn't always kick ass just by, like, you know, stripping down and shooting things. She does it by just always being one step ahead, always having upsmanship on it. And I fucking love that. You know, it was a – I mean, we've seen action heroines, although we don't see nearly enough. and there always seems to be some kind of, like, cheesecake factor attached to them. This one, it was like, no, her cheesecake factor, her sexuality was her big middle finger in your face, and you can take that how you like it. That's what I liked about Tank Girl. So I'm a fan. This movie is nothing like the comics, and I love it still.
It isn't. And for me, in all honesty, when I saw it, I was not familiar with the comic at all. But I watched it because it looked like a crazy film, and that's exactly what I got. This film is one of the most kinetic comic films I think you will get, to where the energy never really feels like it may change tone a bit, but it never really slows down a little, you know, at all, at least for me while watching this. I mean, the thing just keeps moving. And I love the characters in it. The characters and the visuals and the world that they build within this movie are fantastic. And there's very few films, I think, out there that embody that spirit of the 90s, you know, not so much the mainstream 90s, but the fringe 90s as this film, even though it's not part of the comics, and I could be wrong, but... tell me if I'm off on it, but really the way it was directed, where you get the insert of the animated scene in there, I mean, we had been introduced just a couple years earlier, and I think it was still running at the time this was on, maybe it hadn't, but MTV had a show called Liquid Television.
Yeah.
They had these wild animated, one of them was Aeon Flux, which, again, they thought, hey, we could do a live action of that, and it's like, everybody was like, no. No, you can't. You can't do a live action of Aeon Flux. You know, and this had a very similar feel, like it would fit in with the Liquid Television crowd as far as the style when they got to the animated parts. And that's what I love. But I'm a big visual guy, and this film has so many things going on visually. It's crazy, all the stuff they have in the background. And the character of Tank Girl, let's talk about her. She is a bit... Tank Girl is a different... Even the one version that we get in the movie, played by Lori Petty beautifully, she's different than, well, the majority of the female characters we had gotten in cinema, from 85 to 95 or so. I mean, she was different than the majority of those female characters out there, even the main ones, because, like you said... she didn't give a rat's ass about anything. I mean, she doesn't really have an arc in this film as far as any type of real growth, it doesn't feel like, because she's got a really strong personality all along. Never once did I feel like they compromised her personality at all or changed her at all to fit the plot. What do you think, Dawn? Do you think that they just kept her pretty strong, but she doesn't exactly have growth during the film, but it's not that type of film, is it?
Correct. She is, I think they just did, I think what they were doing is just trying to showcase that it's okay to be outrageous and bawdy and vulgar and be a woman. They did have all, to be fair, very small, short clips of her being a little softer and sensual, few and far between in the movie, but you know, they did have just a little splash of that, but it was okay to be in coveralls and tied up and have gross teeth and sunken eyes and still be strong and sassy, and it was okay. I guess I really, really liked the fact that she was so, that they made it so she was so completely unapologetic, no matter what situation she was in. She was always her.
Yeah, the scene that comes to mind, and I'm sure I'd love to hear your thought on it, Cole, was the scene where they have Malcolm McDowell, where she's been captured, she's sassy, and they lock her in the freezer area cell, and Malcolm comes in expecting her to be broken or anything, and she drops a great line that nobody would expect normally from a female character in that situation within cinema, I think, at that day and at that time when this film came out. Wouldn't you agree, Cole, that scenes like that really sum up the Tank Girl attitude about her, making it hard to touch herself?
Absolutely. I think that was fantastic. I mean, yes, I agree completely. I think that scene in specifically is shot beautifully. They discolor her teeth, give her some contacts, and it looks cold in there. And Lori Petty is phenomenal. Absolutely gorgeous in this film. Not to go off on a tangent, the sexuality, I think, should have been more overt and upfront. Mm-hmm. In terms of, if we're speaking of the character as a whole, true, all of the stocking cutting is done with inserts that could have been a stand-in. The kiss between her and Naomi Watts is pretty cold. Again, here I am harking back onto the comic, which I've never done on this show. But none of this was sexy to me. And it's not the stylist. I mean, I love eclectic characters. Sure. And I love colors. Mm-hmm. And I love sort of the whole neon punk thing that was going on in this film. And I don't know what the restrictions were. Maybe a studio exec on set telling Rachel Talalay to rein it in. Because I know Rachel was not about reining it in. I know that about her.
No.
As a director. But I will say, none of this struck me as like being, I mean, I didn't really, it's not, the full film isn't sexual enough. I mean, yeah, she talks the talk. But we rarely see her walk the walk other than just getting, I mean, it reminded me almost of like the Cinemax movies at night where you're just about to see something and they cut away, which is not what the comic book was.
No. So. And considering you're playing with an R rating in here, you'd probably expect at least a little bit more colorful scenes, but
they were surprised by the R rating, which it always amuses me is that they constantly are talking on the both Rachel Talalay and Lori Petty are talking in interviews and everything. They says they were so pissed that the movie got rated R. They said the only reason, and I think it might be part of the reason, they said the only reason this movie got an R was because it was a woman hero in the lead. To which I would say, maybe, but it also could have something to do with the fact that people are getting their chests blown open and you're saying fuck about 40 times in the movie. That might be a clue, too.
God, I don't want to cut in on you, brother. Did you say they do a commentary for this?
There is a, yes, on the, I don't know if they did it on the DVD or, like, when they recorded it.
Yeah.
But on the recent, I know that on the recent Blu-ray that Shout released, there's interviews and there's a commentary between Rachel Talalay and Lori Petty.
A feature length, like over the film?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, awesome.
Glenn, what about you? That scene where she was locked up in the winter cell that Dawn mentioned, you know, how she looks and everything. And I mean, that scene right there does kind of epitomize a little bit of Tank Girl's attitude, doesn't it? I mean, because at no time do you feel like she's actually afraid of something bad happening. Am I off on that? She's very confident. I mean, probably more confident than any female character up until that point in cinema, would you say?
Confident or cocky or just doesn't care.
Sure.
I think it's more apathy than mm-hmm. confidence, or maybe it's confidence inspired by abject apathy.
Sure. Yeah, because it just surprised me with her attitude. I mean, she wanted to save the little girl, but you felt like she was doing it because she felt it was right, not exactly because she was really driven to save her, but just that, yeah, you shouldn't kill little girls, so I'm going to go save her because I kind of like her. She's cool. But it was never, I never felt like the deep emotion like you would expect Hollywood to go, and I was glad of that at least. You know, I mean, this whole film, she really kind of has a bit of a flippant attitude, like, oh, this is a situation. Yep, okay, here we go. We'll work it out. You know, I'll ride the cannon of a tank alongside a semi, which I gotta say, I know there weren't a lot of action scenes, but I will say some of the action scenes in here surprised me, like the scene where they're trying to do the hijacking of the train. Let's start with you, Glenn. Did some of the action scenes, those stunts that they did in here, kind of surprising? I mean, you're a fan of the comics, so you kind of expected them, but still, for a film like this to do some of those, I thought were really interesting, some of the things they pulled off.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's not like it's super amazing, but for what I interpret as a very low budget in the movie that I don't think the studios cared. I didn't think they were expecting a huge return on this.
Right.
So for what they had to work with, I think they did fine. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know. I was too busy watching Lori Petty.
How could you not, with her such a strong personality and a strong character and just being Lori Petty?
I'll say as much as this is not like the comic, mm-hmm. I don't think there's anyone who could have played the role
sure.
better than her.
Oh, especially at that time, I think.
Yeah, at that time I'm talking about. I mean,
she was a great casting for it because, and you could tell she was really into that role too. But the action scenes, Don, did you enjoy the action scenes? Did they surprise you? Did you think they were a little held back or?
I thought they were quite a bit held back, actually. Mm-hmm. They weren't bad, but then I'm looking at this. I'm kind of looking at it in the. It was a lower. It was not intended to be a big box office hit. I don't think they ever intended it to be, which is kind of disappointing because maybe had they tried a little harder, it could have been so much better. Because the potential was definitely there. But no, it was definitely, the action scenes were very restrained. I mean, there were a few good hits, but mm-hmm. for the most part, no, it was very restrained.
Yeah, it, compared to the comic, I'm sure. I mean, for me, though, I liked some of the stunts. Her getting out on the end of the cannon, I thought was pretty cool, that scene with the hijacking of the truck. Mm-hmm. I thought was handled well, but she's not the only strong character in here. We have actually a character I think that has the growth that Tank Girl doesn't have in here, and that's Naomi Watts's character, Jet Girl. I think she's the one that's meant to actually have the growth in here. Cole, what did you think of Naomi Watts's Jet Girl?
Really liked her, man. I enjoy Naomi Watts. She acts from her instincts and is always genuine, mm-hmm. and she was really good in this. I mean, she certainly did her best with what she had to work with, and was a really good sidekick. I thought she did fantastic, man.
I was going to say, especially considering how strong of a character Tank Girl is,
yeah.
it had to be a little bit tough for her, but she seemed to hold her own even in the scenes, you know, with Lori Petty as Tank Girl.
She did, and she's definitely under a lot of heavy makeup, you know, mm-hmm. sort of, you know, synthesized grease in her hair, and, you know, it looks like lack of makeup, even though she has a lot of makeup on. It's all actresses do, but it looks like not much makeup. And, you know, there's a moment where I thought, geez, you know, she could have done Tank Girl, you know, not to put down mm-hmm. Lori Petty, but there's a moment when I thought, God, she could have done Tank Girl. And then my head goes to, well, Charlize Theron should have shaved her head and done Furiosa as Tank Girl. And, then the movie would have worked totally for me. Naomi Watts was fantastic. I thought she was mm-hmm. great.
Yeah, Scott, what about you? You think the Jet Girl is the one that gives us that character growth that you look for in a film?
Well,
and, how do you think Naomi Watts did as Jet Girl in scenes against Tank Girl?
Well, first, I'm not trying to contradict anyone or anything, but I will say that there was a little bit of an arc in that you can see in of the deleted footage, about maybe like 5-10 minutes worth is out there. That you can see on YouTube and stuff, and in an early scene, the bedroom scene that they cut out because the studio was offended by her dildos, it is established in the beginning that Tank Girl is always shirking responsibility mm-hmm. and not like taking any incentive towards anybody but herself, And, of course, in the movie, then she goes and saves Sam. And in the original ending, which is also on the net, mm-hmm. show's called The Spoiler Room, folks, and besides, this isn't the real ending anyway, so fuck it. It's implied that she and Jet Girl and Sub Girl are actually going to start ruling the world.
Sure.
So that's totally taking the responsibility. Now, that's all deleted from the actual movie, though, so anyway, but no, Naomi Watts is awesome. I just found her very attractive. But I don't want to say that because, you know, you don't want to be talking about, like, this great movie, which is a totally, like, is a not only a fun movie, but also a great feminist icon and say, like, Naomi Watts. But, you know, so I don't want to be like that because also I think her character was really good. I liked how she came out and asserted herself from the person who was sitting in her flyer, never able to get it off the ground, always covering her mouth when she smiled, and then takes the incentive to, like, actually, like, lead a revolt on her old compound and come up with the plan and actually, you know, do away with the person who was always, like, you know, trying to get his grubby mitts on her and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I think it's a great thing. Now, the IMDb, I'm going to tell you guys this right now. The IMDb has a very throwaway message in their trivia that Naomi Watts is ashamed of this movie. I don't believe it until I see in print that Naomi Watts says, "Tank Girl, I'm ashamed of that movie. I don't believe it." Because I found about like 3 or 4 other trivia items that are absolutely wrong in their trivia about Tank Girl.
Well, IMDb, we won't get into IMDb and its faults, but there are a plenty there.
You can't trust any of the trivia on Tank Girl. There's like tons of wrong stuff on there. it drove me up a wall when I was reading it.
Glenn, with you and Jet Girl. Do you think she held her own with Tank Girl?
I think she filled the role she needed to fill.
Right.
I mean, you needed someone who, I mean, she gets a little bit of growth because you don't really get that from Tank Girl herself. Tank Girl is Tank Girl throughout the entire movie.
Right.
And you get some growth from her where she comes from this, you know, completely withdrawn shy girl to a slightly less withdrawn shy girl who can eventually shoot the one dude.
Yeah.
Sergeant Small or whatever.
Sergeant Small.
Yeah. So
I remember that character actually appearing in the comics, although not as the same type of person, but
right.
I remember the Smalls character from the comic, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, another actor that I really like. I'm not sure of his name, but
Ron Harvey.
Yeah, he was great in Creepshow 2. I mean, gosh, everybody in this movie is great.
they had a really large cast in here of named people and not just people off the street, so to speak.
I couldn't believe that the guy who like is like in a totally random scene and gets like blown up when Tank Girl like undoes his grenade and he's the guy is just like has like a couple lines and the guy goes oh shit and explodes. It was Toby Ziegler, the guy who won an Emmy. It's Richard Schiff, the guy who won an Emmy for playing Toby Ziegler on the West Wing. I'm like, holy crap! That just blew my mind when I wouldn't have even known it unless they pointed it out to me.
Well, you know, they need their work and they got to start somewhere. I guess that's getting like blown up by Tank Girl isn't a bad way to go.
Wow.
So those were kind of our two heroines in this film, and then we've got, and we won't stay too long on them, but Don Malcolm McDowell as Kesley. How did you feel of him as a villain?
You know, Malcolm McDowell is, for me at least, a staple of the 90s mm-hmm. villains. I mean, he did Tank Girl. He did, oh God, what all did he do? He did, okay, Letting My Geek Flag Fly here. He played the villain whose name I'm drawing a blank on in Star Trek.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Generations.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, he was. He was the evil, the crazy evil professor in Star Trek Generations.
Yeah, I'm. Mm-hmm.
The best
I'm
thing about that
really
is
Colin Soren. Soren.
Yeah. I mean, he. God, I think that was in the 90s when that came.
Yeah,
out.
It was in the 90s. It was near the end of the 90s.
Yeah, he was the year before, actually. Yeah.
But for so. And he's done so many other things that for me it just I thought he was brilliant as the villain in this. And he looked he carried it like he was having so much fun with it.
He was.
And that's what I appreciated about it in his portrayal of this is it didn't matter because he looked like he was having fun. Therefore he made by giving that aura of having so much fun with the character and just running with it. And he didn't care if it was a crappy movie or not because he enjoyed it.
Well, I think this falls in line with what Scott mentioned about, you know, I believe it was Scott, about Stan Winston taking a pay cut just to do this film. Glenn, wouldn't you say this is a film that I think people wanted to get into just because it gave him a chance to just cut loose and have some fun with a Hollywood film, something that they might, you know, not normally have done in the past, and just something that they wanted to do because it looked fun?
Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, when people – was that one video we someone posted where the guy's talking about how, like, Malcolm McDowell's, like, embarrassed about this movie. Has he watched any of the other things Malcolm McDowell's done?
Yeah,
I mean, no kidding, right?
Cyborg 3.
Where did he say he was embarrassed by that? No one cites their sources for these things.
Not everything he's done is. I mean, yes, he did Clockwork Orange, but you know what? Not everything's been Clockwork Orange.
No,
so, I mean,
Cyborg 3, the Recycler. Let's
Fist of the North Star. That. Kid, that one where King Arthur is a little kid or something, yeah.
I can't see someone who was in Caligula being embarrassed about anything they've ever done.
Well said. Cole, would you say, though, that this appeared, though, at least, that this was filmmakers, they saw an opportunity to possibly just do something completely different from the norm, and so people tried to take, you know, they all hopped on and tried to do something different and have fun with a film, and I think that does come across on screen, wouldn't you say?
I would like that as an extension of that. Maybe a lot of them were fans of the comic. Mm-hmm. I mean, certainly Stan Winston is pretty savvy, as I'm sure a lot of these people are. You know, like I was saying, how I got introduced to this comic was breaking free of, you know, not a negative group of people, but a certain group of people who maybe didn't care as much about being creative. And a lot of the people involved in this movie are surrounded by creative people. So there's not a doubt in my mind that the majority of them had at least heard of Tank Girl, you know. Right. I'm assuming. I could be way off. But I'm assuming that's part of it. And without a doubt, there's a lot of crazy shit that happens in this movie. My lady friend's jaw was certainly agape. I would love for her to read the comics, actually.
Sure.
It's a comic. And I would have preferred that had been her initiation, if you will. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Stan Winston, I mean, is, you know, I don't know if I'd be able to say, hey, you know, this is a Stan Winston movie if I hadn't, you know, known that beforehand, but certainly what he did is memorable. I mean, and I, without a doubt, yeah, lots of people in this movie are having a great time. Malcolm McDowell is, with what he has to work with, you know, like the scene with the walking across the glass.
Yes, in bare feet. You know, I love that.
Certainly. He does great, man. When does he not do great? Like Glenn was saying. Yeah, when does he not do good? One of my favorite roles of his is in the much-hated Halloween 2, where people say, oh, he's overacting, and I say, have you ever met people in his life? This is how these people are. They don't have the time. Anyways, I'm getting out of sight. I love Malcolm McDowell, and I think he did a great job with what he had to work with, definitely.
Yeah, I think so too, and he does look like he's just having fun, and this is that type of film that I think you do that with. You know, filmmakers are like, hey, I could do something different if they'll take me. Oh, yes, they will. Great.
Apparently, what happened was they asked who they wanted. They asked Hewlett and Martin, like, who do you want for the villain? They said, oh, Malcolm McDowell, never thinking that they'd actually get him. And he, like, signed on right away. He was totally into it. And they say, you know, when he went on set, they said, nope, he was totally professional. There were scenes where he could have had a stand-in, go in there and just, like, sit in his spot in the meantime, and he said, nope, I'm on set. This is exactly what I'm doing. I'm here. I'm here to commit to it. And he committed to the thing like a professional. And if you ask me, Malcolm McDowell was a fantastic villain here. I love every little bit of his delivery in this movie. I think he's got wonderful sinister bits to his delivery. Like, for instance, when he says, do you want to work for Water and Power? And she says, not interested. He just kind of leans forward and says, not yet. Yeah. I love that. Yeah. And then there's little, like, great bits, like, where he's got Sergeant Smalls over him, and Malcolm McDowell is drinking from the little water pistol.
Yes.
And he goes, if you want to know my opinion, no. And he just sprays him real quick. I mean, just total little touches like that, which, I mean, every little touch. If you ask me, Malcolm McDowell is one of the best things about this movie. And yeah, he has done some bad movies. I think Malcolm McDowell would even admit that. But you know what? He was totally there. He was totally committed to it, and it shows. It shows. Mm-hmm. I'm taking this seriously. I am the bad guy in Tank Girl, and I'm not going to just act like I'm collecting a paycheck. I'm gonna be there and do this shit.
He takes it seriously, but he still has fun.
Oh, he has fun. But like a lot of people did that. Like Ice-T did that.
Yeah,
in this movie. Ice-T, you know, I'm sure you wanted to probably get to him and stuff. But...
Oh, yeah. We'll get to those characters in just a little bit. but I just wanted to mention Malcolm McDowell because, yeah, I adored it as much as I adored, you know, Tank Girl. I adore his Kesley too character. I loved all these different characters that you're introduced to in this movie. It's just this wild cast of characters. You're not quite sure who you're going to run across next, you know, including before we get to the Kangaroo Men, because I want to kind of leave those to last, because there's much to talk about there, I think. What I will say, where you talk about the randomness, folks, this film even has a musical number with the Cole Porter song, which now that you've heard it, you can expect it. I won't tell exactly where, but at one point, yes, Tank Girl leads a group of people in the singing of a Cole Porter song. Don, talk about the most random part of this movie. I mean, that pretty much sums up how it just jumps from scene to scene, doesn't it?
It does. The whole, like I said, the whole movie is just a sequence of action scenes, adventure scenes, whatever, and that is one of them. Completely random, completely fun, completely irrelevant, and has nothing to do with anything else. I mean, they're in the middle of doing their thing. They capture the bad guy of the moment and tell her that
you sing.
They threaten to scrape her makeup off if she doesn't sing.
But this could take a while.
This could take a while.
Oh, her delivery of those lines were great. The musical number surprised me the first time it came through, but I also love it because I'm a big... I like jazz and Cole Porter songs and that. And the song they sing, too... is just, I think, kind of appropriate for the environment that they're sitting in. So, Glenn, wouldn't you, isn't this musical number just out of place yet fitting for the tone of the movie by that point of the film?
Oh, absolutely. It is perfectly fitting.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of because of things that obviously weren't allowed to show, I think that the song has even a bit more place in the movie.
Sure.
Because, you know, I mean, you have, there's plenty of jokes by the original creator of Tank Girl, you know, with all the bestiality, because the fact that you have kangaroo people and Tank Girl and Jet Girl and other people. So, so I think the song is a perfect fit for the movie.
Yeah, I thought it was appropriate as well, especially later on as the film moves on.
Birds do it, bees do it. Iced tea dresses a kangaroo, do it.
Let's fall in love. Yes, and falling in love, our heroes come across these evil rippers, which are actually genetically modified kangaroo people who run around in armor and tear up water and power. And the kangaroo people, folks, yeah. Scott, these people, if they came out with this film today, this film would get, I think, protested left and right.
By who? People for the ethical treatment of kangaroos?
Well, because...
So we'll play in Australia. Who gives a shit?
Well, let's face it, all the kangaroos are portrayed as... Well, darker-skinned people.
Oh, not necessarily.
No, not really.
No, I don't think so.
You don't think that? You don't think that would be taken aback? I mean, we got ice.
No,
you know,
weren't. Well, they weren't all portrayed by African Americans, first of all.
Well, no.
It was just that their pigmentation of their skin,
sure,
was like that because, well, they were kangaroos.
Well, not only that, if their skin was kind of splotchy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, because they're genetic experiments, so I don't think they... I don't think that they had a race in any way other than they were, as they say, reincarnated from other... that they were from other people. Like, one's a reincarnation of Jack Kerouac, another one's a reincarnation of a cop and stuff like that. I don't think that they were... meant is that so? I don't think that. Yeah, it's a great line, isn't it? I love that part too. I don't think that I would have to respectfully disagree with you on that one, buddy. I'm sorry.
No, I'm just actually bringing it up to see what you guys thought of it. I personally, I'm saying in today's day and age, had those characters portrayed is my point. In all honesty, I personally don't either, but with the way everybody gets offended nowadays, would you see that as taken as that, or would they get away with it and you don't think there'd be controversy with folks?
I think if there was any controversy, it would be by the most, like, wingnut people who are going to get offended at everything. And you know what? People... You know, if I have one message for the world, is that people need to stop taking themselves so goddamn seriously. I swear to God. I mean, I believe that there are certain things that we need to be conscious of in society, too. I mean, there's absolutely things, you know. When I was a kid, they used to say that I was blind. Well, no, I'm not blind. Okay, then you're handicapped. Well, no, I'm not handicapped. I'm, you know, visually impaired. It's a difference, you know, and it matters, you know, when people don't say it the right way. Mm-hmm. Other than that, though, you know what? Yeah, lighten up.
I just wanted to get your feeling. I wouldn't agree with it either, but I like to try to bring up conversation pieces here, and you know, I wanted to get your guys' perspective on it. You know, you just take the kangaroo people as just kangaroo people, Cole, or do you think people would read more into it if, say, this film came out today?
Oh boy, that's a good question. I actually hadn't thought of that either. You know, I look at films more of their time.
Sure.
Iced Tea constantly was this character, not a kangaroo, obviously.
No, but a cranky guy.
If you watch Johnny Mnemonic, he shows up almost at the exact same point in the film.
Yeah.
It does almost so that's kind of the way I was looking at it, you know. Mm-hmm. But I do agree with you on a certain level, Mark. I you know, obviously part of my disdain having watched this movie tonight was probably, honestly, I've watched nothing but Wes Craven movies for about 2 weeks. So my brain is kind of on an intellectual high. And, yeah. I, you know, the more we talk, the more I'm like, lighten the fuck ups, Cole. And, but along that note, you know, People Under the Stairs couldn't be released nowadays, even though I see that as almost being an anti-racism movie.
Sure.
So I do see what you're saying, Mark. I didn't see that in this sequence. I saw it more as Ice-T was probably, I mean, he was in everything for a few years.
He was, yeah.
He was he was in everything at this point. And
yeah.
Can I just talk about like how awesome he was in this movie though? Because I like Ice-T a lot. Even back when I used to be like rap music, but which I don't just say anymore because I actually love Ice-T's music. I always loved Ice-T. I thought he was hilarious. I thought he was great, and he totally owns this. Apparently, he said, "Kingman on the script says," and he's being put in makeup. He says, "You know, I read the script. They said I was a kangaroo person. I didn't actually believe I was a kangaroo person. I'm on set now. God damn, I'm a kangaroo person." And you know what? He's doing this thing, but they said that he used to ad-lib in his scenes, that he like committed to his character and stuff and everything like that, and he would ad-lib in scenes. They said, "You never complain, Ice. Why don't you say?" He just says, "Beats prison." Because, and he said that goes totally into his thing, because if you look at like his rap career and then his acting career, which still continues to this day, I mean his alternative based on like where he was, you know, I think I don't want to talk out of school or anything, but I think if I recall, he used to be like a pimp and stuff at one point, prison was a very logical end for him, and he beat that shit by finding what he was really good at, and he is so good at it, and he totally did. And I love the fact that Ice-T is coming out here dressed as a kangaroo, made up as a kangaroo, Stan Winston, and be like, "Ain't gonna be no crumpets and tea." Yeah. I just love, and I love all of his little facial expressions, everything he does. He totally owns the character. He's of the Rippers, which I like all of them. He is my favorite one in the movie by far.
Oh, I love Ice-T in this too. He really, again, is having fun and owning the character, and actually seemed, out of all of them, I think he seemed the most comfortable in the makeup. What did you think, Glenn? I mean, out of the actors, they were all great actors, but you forget that's Ice-T in kangaroo makeup. The other ones, he kind of felt like that, but him, he's like, "No, that's kangaroo tea."
I don't know if I forget. I mean, I think it's just because he's Ice-T. That's that's all he can be.
Sure.
I don't think he can be anyone else. Everything I've ever seen him in, I'm still like, it's Ice-T. I mean, the dude will be 95. He'll be playing someone's great grandpa on like a Lifetime, you know, space movie, and he'll still be Ice-T.
Yeah.
So,
but he seemed comfortable though in the makeup more so than I would say some of the other folks. The way he, like as Scott mentioned, he actually gets a few more like facial expression than that. He seemed to play, you know, to the makeup, to the character a little more than some of the others, I think.
I would say probably the best one for that was Booga.
Uh-huh.
Oh yeah.
Love Jeff Cober.
Jeff Cober.
He's so good. He's so good. I was looking up some of that dude's credits, and you know,
he was in Buffy.
Yes, and that was the one that got me, is that he was he played a couple parts on Buffy. Later, once he played the, you know, the magic dealer and the thing. But in the early episodes, he was that hill. The first season, he was that hillbilly serial killer. He turned into a vampire, going pork and beans through the mortuary. If you remember, that was the same dude who played Booga. I'm like, that's a range. That is a range right there. That's really good.
That brings to mind, he was also in China Beach with Brian Wimmer, mm-hmm. who played Tank Girl's boyfriend at the beginning.
Yes. Oh, okay. No. See, I never got to get into that show, so that's really interesting. That's cool.
Yep.
So, yeah, well, a number of these people end up working together either before or after Tank Girl, so
yeah.
At least not everybody was strangers to each other in this film. And I liked the Ripper characters at the, you know, on the whole. They at least gave them each their own personality, which was good. And these guys actually kicked tail. No pun intended, but maybe a little.
No, you meant that.
I will say that. But you know, I liked them because they were different than you're thinking rebels and you're thinking rippers and the way they portray them, and then you get to these kangaroo guys and you're like, they're kangaroo guys.
Like, and they were awesome. I love
them. And they were awesome. And they had their own a bit of own rituals, not including trying to hump Jet Girl. which she had the greatest expression, I would swear, on her face when that was going on.
But at the end of the, if you look at the end of the scene, she's like getting into it.
Yeah, she is getting into it.
Oh yeah, I got that too, actually, dude.
Yeah, she kind of just lets loose a little bit and really gets into it. And then, of course, we get the scene later on with the famous torpedo bra, which was from the comic, correct? Or was that just thrown in there for?
That was in the book, if I remember. I don't. Mm-hmm. Remember when, because it's been like, you gotta remember, it's been like 15 years since I've been able to find my old Tank Girl comics, so.
Yeah, man, I hesitate to vouch for anything now, because Glenn schooled me. I mean, apparently, I just looked it up, her name was Rebecca.
Yeah, me
I have no memory of that either, so, you know, I need to revisit those books. My girlfriend's already talking about looking at, we have the day off tomorrow, so we might go to lacrosse and try and find them, but I can't vouch for that at this point, even though I consider myself a fan. It's been a few years, you know.
But that again is the randomness. I mean, her wardrobe changes like consistently throughout this film. She just suddenly she's wearing something different. In this case, now she's wearing a torpedo bra. Dawn, what'd you think of the randomness of her wardrobe throughout the film? Was it fitting to the character in the movie?
Oh, I loved it. Yeah. Oh yeah, I loved it. Mm-hmm. It didn't matter if it made sense or not. She's walking around in a bra and a skirt. She's walking around in the torpedo bra. She's walking around. What the hell was she walking around in at one point? That whole sequence in the what was it? Liquid silver, was that the bra? That whole sequence at the when she's in there with the
robot, the hologram telling her what to wear,
and trying to figure out what to wear, and she walks out and she's like, her costume is, she's got these shorts and it looks like she's got some razor blades stitched to the shorts, and she's supposed to be this high-end, she's supposed to be dressed like this high-end hooker, and she's just trash, and it's awesome.
She is.
Well, safety pins, razor blades.
Well, it's so great because in that scene, it's like if you followed all of our instructions, you should look like this, and all the women look the same there.
Uh-huh.
She comes out, and she almost looks like a mirror image of that, not put together well, black instead of white, you know? All that stuff. It's really good. I love it.
Yeah, the wardrobe makes a statement about her character here, and this isn't the first 90s film where we get odd clothing like that. Fifth Element comes to mind when I watched this as close, I would say, the film came to the just wild fashion that not just Tank Girl wears, but everybody's wearing in this, you know, outside of the Water and Power guys who are wearing the more, you know, uniform things. And then you get out into the wasteland, if you will, and man, these fashions are just crazy. You know, and I loved it. And it really is fitting. The film, and we'll kind of wrap it up here for tonight, I will say, with Tank Girl, My thought on it is that this film really has its own identity, even though it doesn't follow the comic at all. I will say for the films that came out around that time, it definitely stands out as a unique individual that I love because of the visuals and such, and you know, and the outrageousness and just the craziness of the film. You know, it's always good to get a zany film, you know, for this. And I, you know, I would recommend it to people. What about you, Don? Your final kind of thoughts with Tank Girl as how it sits within the 90s films that had come out around that time? You think it was a unique, kind of had its own identity, or?
Oh, absolutely. And when you look at the timeline of other movies that came out just before and just after it, it obviously had its flaws and for reasons it was not as big of a success, but I would definitely consider it a worthy movie in with movies like The Fifth Element and other outrageous movies of the time, definitely.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Glenn? Would you say that this film at least stands out a bit in the mid-90s among the others with its feeling of its own identity?
Oh, yeah. There's not really films that are like this.
Mm-hmm.
I would say you'd be hard-pressed finding anything at all quite like Tank Girl. I mean,
sure.
It's got a very interesting style, and just the whole way it's made is just, it's very different. I mean, yeah, there's some standard, you know, there were some of the standard tropes of a post-violent movie by giving, you know, a plotless comic a plot, but I mean, they kind of had to, because if they had just converted the comic to the screen, holy fuck. I don't know what that would have been, because as much as I like Tank Girl, I can only read it in small amounts.
Sure.
Because just my brain can't process what isn't really happening. So, and I mean, I think the movie did probably one of the better jobs it could have with the material that should never have been made into a movie to begin with.
Sure. It might have been, probably was one of those edgy comics that, you know, producers or somebody saw and said, well, as you mentioned, Scott, I believe you said the director read the comic between, or was that?
It was Cole said
Cole,
that.
Cole said that the director read the comic between takes on Freddy's Dead and that and
yes,
really enjoyed
yes,
it.
Yes, that's correct.
You know, and so I could see the studios thinking, going, well, they did The Crow, and that was an edgy comic, so let's do this. And then they, not realizing what Tank Girl really was.
Yeah.
It took them a long time to get the rights to it. Apparently, like, she got the rights right after Freddy's Dead. Mm-hmm. It spent, like, the next few years trying to get it made. And then just when she had given up hope, she got the money to make it, so she's all excited to make it, and she still got to make a good portion of the movie she wanted to make, but then the studio stepped in and did like a whole bunch of pulled a whole bunch of crap.
Sure. Would you say though, even with all the stuff that was pulled and it not meeting, you know, the even more randomness at the comics, Scott, would you say that Tank Girl at least has its own identity and stands out as one of those films that you really should watch from the mid-90s?
Oh, God, yes. I love this movie. As I said, like, you know, when I mention all the things that the movie wasn't able to be, and the way, and I mentioned all the things that it kind of contradicts its, or at least sometimes the spirit of its source material in certain ways, but not in most ways. As I said, you know, I had those posters in my room. I loved this thing. I was showing everybody. I said, you haven't seen Tank Girl? You have to see Tank Girl. I loved this movie. I watched this thing a million times. I saw it in the theater twice, which is quite a feat when you consider it was pretty much gone within 3 weeks.
Sure.
I when it came out on VHS, I bought the VHS, saw that as a million times as I could. When it came out on DVD, I saw that as many times. I even had a friend who had the Laserdisc in between, and I was like going over to his place and seeing, trying to see like the Laserdisc. I love this movie. This is a great movie. I love everything. Even though it might not be the punk rock anarchy that it could be all the time. I think it's got so many great people behind it. I think it's got so many great people in it. And I still love the spirit of Tank Girl. Absolutely.
Awesome. And Cole, we know you didn't quite care for the film on the rewatch and that, but would you say this film does stand out in the mid-90s as you know, with its own identity? Not only that, but I think it does have some of the spirit of that was going on in the 90s, you know, for some of the underground movements and such that were going on. Do you think at least kind of expresses itself at least as its own, you know, it's not trying to be like the others?
Well, I will definitely say, man, in terms of strong female characters and just to start out, Rachel Talalay, Lori Petty, and Naomi Watts all deserve a hats off for their work on this. And when you compare it to all of the movies that The Crow paved way for, and it did, such as Spawn, such as Judd Dredd, Barbed Wire, Blade, and The Phantom, this obviously has the strongest women in it. I feel bad that not many of these filmmakers or just the studios perhaps specifically didn't learn from what The Crow wasn't afraid to do, which is really be punk rock and really not be afraid of sexuality, both romantic and perverse, and really just put that shit on the screen. I know that's not Rachel Talalay's fault. To me, it stands out. To me, Tank Girl will always exist more in a Mad Max world, whereas this version exists in a Tommy Boy world.
Okay, sure.
And that's my biggest gripe with it, but I love Lori Petty. I think she did probably the best with what she had to work with, and I'm sure this movie gave Rachel Talalay some gray hairs while she was making it, trying to make this feminist, sexually free, rock and roll action movie, and probably being supervised by a shit ton of uptight men. Must have been a nightmare. And I feel bad for that. And actually, I almost want to watch the movie again because you guys have made me look at the movie a whole different way, you know? And I feel bad for my Facebook posts earlier.
Don't.
No, I do. Because, you know, I got frustrated during the Wes Craven show last week, and here I was about to do the same thing. And, you know, I apologize for that. This is a unique thing. You know, it is.
It is. Whether or not it's really, whether or not you think it's really good or really bad, you got to give props for them to even try to do something like this.
Yeah,
you know, especially in the time of the 90s. You give them props for going out on a limb and doing something like this. And I agree that it did, you know, Crow paved the way for films similar to this. And even I will say that maybe it gave some influence to Fifth Element in some ways, because if you feel the energy of Fifth Element, it has a similar kind of unique type of energy to it that Tank Girl did. So I wouldn't doubt that there might have been some influences. And the director, she's fantastic. She's still doing stuff today. In fact, what I wanted to bring up quick is she most recently, all you Whovians out there, she directed a few great episodes of the most recent Doctor Who, including Dark Water episode and Death in Heaven, which were two really great episodes. And she's got two more. Apparently, she's doing, it looks like for episode 9, season 12, season 9, episode 12 and 11 coming out, if they aren't out already. I don't think they're out yet. Those ones that she did. So, I mean, she's still working today. She's got talent, and this was only her third film, and I thought it was great, you know. I think if you're a lover of unique films, maybe if you're not necessarily a diehard fan of the film, but even if you are a diehard fan of the comic, you should probably check it out because it's the closest thing you come to. And I don't ever foresee them remaking this one.
No. I can see them trying to reboot it, but they'll just screw it up again.
MGM owns the rights for a hell of a long time, and they're not...
And all MGM does is remake their own shit these days. They don't have any original thoughts, it seems. And they'll say, like, okay, we can do it. We can do it right this time. Let's see, who should we get to direct? Quick, someone with a penis. Yeah. That's what they'll do. Oh, you just screwed it up.
Yeah, you're already screwed up on the gate. So yeah. you probably don't want to wait around till the remake for this, folks. So I would say check out the original for yourself for Tank Girl. Just enjoy the energy, the craziness of it, and appreciate what they did, because it just like most recently Mad Max Fury Road, much like a few films that have come out, you've got filmmakers just taking a chance and doing something wild and outside of what is the mainstream norm. And whether or not you think that film is good or bad, you got to give respect for them trying to do that, because it's all about the numbers nowadays. And you've heard us talk about it on the show before. It's all about, you know, what you can get at the the box office. So the fact that they go out on a limb and do something original like Tank Girl, you got to give at least respect to. And if you're looking for something different, I think we all agree, at least check it out once. I don't think you'll be disappointed. And if anything, just have fun. You know, have a drink, sit back, and enjoy the randomness of this. And especially if you're a Cole Porter fan, you may want to check it out, because it's pretty musical number. So we're going to wrap it up here for you tonight. Cole, why don't you go first? Where can they find you at, sir?
Man, I'm on Facebook because it's free, and I'm making a movie. The Last Great Horror Movie will be out very shortly. You can find info on that at Shadows and Lovers Productions on Facebook. Again, Shadows and Lovers Productions. Check it out. Also, Horror Roar, where I do a lot of fan art, digital fan art. And if you're not completely insane and you would like to just talk about movies, feel free to friend me, Cole Meredith, M-E-R-E-D-I-T-H. You can see my logo, I Live to Make Movies, which is very much the case. Thanks for having me, Mark. I'm glad I did this show, man. I have much more appreciation for Tank Girl now.
Well, we're glad you showed up, Cole, because we always like to have a variety of opinions here in the spoiler room. Because if everybody thought the same way, it just would be boring. Don, where can we find you at when you're not here with us?
You can find me in theaudience.net.
Fantastic. And BFD, Glenn, go ahead, sir. Where can we find you?
You can find me on Facebook with Naked Hope Productions and B-Movie Bunker, and on YouTube, same thing, Naked Hope Productions, B-Movie Bunker, or follow me on Twitter at Naked Hobo.
And if you're looking for some fun and interesting indie films that are shorts, check those channels out, because Glenn is also a filmmaker. He doesn't just talk about films, he makes them, just like Mr. Cole Meredith. And then
he makes good films, too. You guys got to see Hell. Anybody out there? Hell, YouTube, Hell.
There you go. Yeah, go to Naked Hobo Productions and then look for Hell. If you just search for Hell on YouTube, you'll see everybody complaining about YouTube's copyright policy. Speaking of copyright policy, Mr. Scott Davis, go ahead about your show and where can we find you at?
Yeah, I got banned a couple times. Shit. I'm totally legal, but it still got banned because robots. Anyway, I'm on Moviocrity.com is where you can find a lot of my writings, a lot of the podcasts I'm on. Moviocrity.com. Also, that's named after my web series, Moviocrity, which you can also check out all those episodes on Vimeo. That's where you can still find all of them. And then, as Mark alluded to, most of them are on YouTube, but you want them all. Go to Vimeo.
There you go. And as always, and I just remind you, in case this is the first time you've been listening to the Spoiler Room, check out specialmarkproductions.com. That's where you can find links to everybody's material here. It'll take you to their pages, and you can also check out my stuff there, where I have a link for my stuff for We Live Film. I have the archives for not only the spoiler rooms that are audio only on iTunes, but also our older Google Hangouts that we did, episodes 1 through 25. You can find links there as well, as there's a festival page now where I've got all the coverage I did for the past Oshkosh Horror Film Festival, as well as a Short Bus to Insanity Film Festival. You can check those out all at specialmarkproductions.com. And if you go from there, you can find links to all my other things that I do. Folks, I hope you enjoyed this conversation about Tank Girl. If you didn't know about it before, hopefully we gave you something to whet your appetite for you to go out and seek out this original film, especially now when you have so many cookie cutter superhero films that it seems that we're getting lately. Tank Girl is definitely one that is outside of the norm, if nothing else, and it's definitely a wild ride. So check out Tank Girl. Thank you so much. Now I just have one question. All in favor of crumpets and tea, say aye.
Aye.